Coming up, the distinctive ways that Latino Catholics mark Holy Week.
We can feel it, we can see it, we can hear it, we can almost taste it. And it's that full use of the senses that is very distinctive of Hispanic popular religiosity.
And 50 years after Martin Luther King Jr.'s pilgrimage to the land of Gandhi, veterans of the civil rights movement make their own pilgrimage.
Our teachings, the methods that we use, all came from the life and the spirit of Mohandas Gandhi.
Plus, Passover and Exodus, a story of freedom and radical change.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're yourretirementcompany.com. Also by the Henry Luce Foundation and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Welcome, I'm Bob Abernethy. It's good to have you with us. At a summit in England this week, President Obama and other leaders of the world's most prosperous nations pledged more than $1 trillion for loans to help impoverished countries. The Group of 20 had gathered to discuss solutions to the global financial crisis. Pope Benedict XVI, the World Council of Churches, and many other religious groups had urged the G20 members to include poverty reduction as part of their plan. Meanwhile, as Congress debated the federal budget, religious groups renewed their concerns for the poor here as well. The U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops and the president of Oxfam America were among those asking lawmakers to boost spending to alleviate poverty and to address health care and education. Jewish leaders also lobbied against hunger. They held a special pre-Passover Seder on Capitol Hill to urge support for better nutrition for children. Christian and Jewish leaders came together this week to urge passage of immigration reform. One new voice in that cause was Leith Anderson, president of the National Association of Evangelicals. The NAE has not been active in the immigration debate, but Anderson said because of the increasing numbers of Hispanics in evangelical churches, his group realizes the issue must become part of its political agenda. For Western Christians, this coming week is Holy Week, the time between Palm Sunday and Easter. Here in the U.S., the growth of the Hispanic community is bringing new prominence to some of the distinctive ways that Latino Catholics mark this sacred period. Last year, we followed Holy Week in one of the oldest Catholic communities in the country, San Antonio, Texas. Kim Lawton has the story.
For America's burgeoning Latino community, there are many special rituals to make Holy Week, Semana Santa, come to life.
This whole week, in a sense, captures that final week of Jesus' life and kind of helps us to walk through it with Jesus, and so that we can understand a little bit better what it means to us and how we have to live our lives.
Father David Garcia is director of the historic parishes, the old Spanish missions, for the Catholic Archdiocese of San Antonio.
Hispanics, especially in this country and throughout Latin America and in Spain, also have popular religious devotions that helps them to, in a sense, experience a little bit more personally with all the senses. We can see it, we can hear it, we can almost taste it. And it's that full use of the senses that is very distinctive of Hispanic popular religiosity.
The most intense part of the week begins on Holy Thursday, often called Maundy Thursday. This is when Jesus celebrated the Last Supper, a Passover meal, with his disciples on the night before he died.
What the church celebrates that day is the institution of the Eucharist, that is, communion.
On this day, another central practice for many Christian traditions is a foot washing ceremony, remembering the gospel story of Jesus washing the feet of his disciples during the Last Supper.
Christ connected the Eucharist with service to others. And that's the power of Holy Thursday, that in taking the Eucharist and taking communion, it's not just my little spiritual moment with God, even though that's part of it, but it's also a commitment to be the body of Christ for the world, to go out and to serve.
Many Hispanic churches also include a blessing of special bread called pan bendito, which is passed out after the service.
The whole idea of the pan bendito is that this is the bread you have been given. Just as you've been given a lot of gifts, you have been given a lot of resources in your life, so now you need to go and share.
In the Hispanic Catholic tradition, Good Friday is especially important. And so many Latino churches actually begin their Friday observances on Thursday. At San Antonio's historic San Fernando Cathedral, after the Holy Thursday service, the crowd spills out into the courtyard for a reenactment of Jesus praying in the Garden of Gethsemane and then his arrest.
The last image is a difficult image. Jesus is manhandled. Jesus is tied up. Jesus is dragged off. So you go home with this very deep sense of sorrow and reflection and suffering that is now going to be very much a part of Good Friday.
On Good Friday, Latino churches typically hold a variety of services all day and into the evening. Many of those observances are held outside and in the streets. Passion plays, which retell the story of the crucifixion, are especially popular. San Fernando has held a Good Friday Passion Play for more than 275 years. Today, some 25,000 people show up for it. There are more reenactments telling the familiar story. Jesus standing before the Roman governor Pilate, being tried, mocked, and beaten, and finally convicted.
The community of San Fernando includes no professional actors or actresses. They are people who are the working poor of San Antonio. They're going to be the ones cleaning the hotel rooms. They're going to be the ones sweeping the school floors. They're going to be the ones driving the buses.
Within the Passion Play is another widespread Hispanic practice, Via Crucis, the way of the cross. As Jesus carries his cross to the place where he will be crucified, crowds follow in procession through the city streets, trying to identify with what he went through.
We take the city, the center of the city, just for a few moments on Good Friday, and we recreate it. In a sense, we make it sacred. We make secular sacred, and in that process, we become more sacred. We become more faith-filled.
Garcia says the traditions first came from Spain, where Catholics living under Islamic rule tried to preserve their identity by holding open-air ceremonies. When Spanish missionaries came to the New World, those traditions tied into Native American traditions of holding public rituals. Early Spanish missionaries used Passion Plays to help overcome language barriers in their efforts to convert indigenous people and teach them the faith.
And so these plays, these dramas, these public events in the plazas, in the streets of the cities, began to take the place of kind of going into a classroom and reading a catechism book.
The long procession finally stops in front of the cathedral for the most dramatic moment of all, the crucifixion. Jesus cries in pain as they nail him to the cross. His mother Mary weeps nearby.
Often that brings all of us. I mean, I've seen it many, many times. I cry every year. So it's just a really wonderful kind of experience. We know it's not the real thing, but what we do also know is that it calls us to share in the real thing.
Mourning then continues inside the church with a service called Siete Palabras, the seven words. Many Christians hold Good Friday meditations on the last words Jesus spoke from the cross. But here, there's a distinctive Latino flair, solemn music and liturgical dancing in the flamenco style.
It's remembering our sufferings. It's remembering that we go through so much, and yet he did it before us, and he knows what it's all about.
And for Hispanic Catholics, the grief continues later in the evening with the traditional pésame service.
In Spanish, the word pésame basically is sympathy. So pésame is going to the person who has lost someone through death and giving them your sympathy. In this case, It's Mary, the mother of Jesus, the sorrowful mother. We accompany Mary in her moment of greatest sorrow, in her moment of greatest need, in her moment of greatest suffering.
Mary and the other women prepared Jesus' body for burial, and then, one by one, people in the congregation also come forward with their own funeral preparations.
It's a spiritual experience, but it's also very physical. It's very bodily. Hispanics have a very, I guess in this part of the country, a very kind of an earthy spirituality. It's a spirituality in which they want to be close. They want to be close to Christ. They want to touch him. They want to feel him. They want to speak to him as if he's there.
Garcia says all the services on this day are intended to drive home the magnitude of what happened with the crucifixion.
Good Friday needs to be heavy and needs to be tough, and it's good for us. It connects you with the fact that this world is basically, the human experience is basically one of suffering.
Saturday is traditionally the quietest day on the church calendar. Some Christians gather in the evening for a candlelight vigil, symbolizing the darkness that will soon give way to the light of the resurrection. And then, finally, Easter Sunday. And the celebration of the Christian belief that Jesus rose from the dead. The flowers of grief become symbols of life and joy. In Catholic churches, the priest sprinkles holy water on the crowd, a reminder of the connection between baptism and Christ's resurrection.
We now celebrate his new life. We celebrate his resurrection. That life is given to us in baptism, and now we're called to live that life in the world. And so the whole idea of the sprinkling of the water upon us, that's the power of Easter.
Garcia says the range of Holy Week emotions and the physical act of participating in all the observances have a profound spiritual impact.
It's like I've gone through this spiritual renewal, this spiritual experience once again, and I've touched the very foundation of my faith.
I'm Kim Lawton reporting.
In other news, Iowa's Supreme Court ruled that the state's ban on same-sex marriage is unconstitutional. When the decision goes into effect in a few weeks, Iowa will be the third state, along with Massachusetts and Connecticut, to allow gay marriage. Iowa has no residency requirements for marriage, meaning that gay couples from other states could get married there. In Washington last weekend, Newt Gingrich, former Speaker of the House, was received into the Roman Catholic Church. He had been a Baptist, but his wife, his third, is Catholic. Both Gingrich's two previous marriages were annulled by the church. 50 years ago, at the beginning of America's civil rights movement, Martin Luther King, Jr. went to India to walk in the footsteps of one of his heroes, Mohandas Gandhi, who had led India's successful struggle for independence from Britain. Dr. King was strongly influenced by Gandhi's teachings of nonviolent resistance. Recently, Dr. King's son and many civil rights veterans revisited India to honor both King and Gandhi. Fred DeSam Lazaro was there.
The delegation was a who's who of the civil rights era, among them John Lewis, Andrew Young, as well as Martin Luther King III, retracing the steps of his iconic namesake, who'd come 50 years ago to pay homage at the shrine to Mahatma Gandhi in New Delhi.
My dad said that he came to many countries around the world as a tourist, but came to India as a pilgrim.
His father's visit to India may be a little-known footnote from an eventful period in American history, but it was a pivotal event for the leader of the civil rights movement.
It really allowed him to get his credentials as a Gandhian, which was very important to him. He saw himself as a follower of Gandhi, someone who had learned a great deal from Gandhi. So going to India was crucial for him because he felt that he would be judged by Gandhi's followers and that they would understand him to be someone who was carrying on that tradition.
For King in 1959, India, independent only since 1947, was a beacon of hope. Even though Gandhi was assassinated barely 1 year after independence, his civil disobedience approach had successfully liberated India from British colonial rule. King was influenced by such nonviolent tactics as Gandhi's famous 200-mile march to protest the salt monopoly, which made one of life's basic necessities unaffordable for many Indians. King's visit with Gandhi's followers invigorated the American civil rights movement. Former U.S. ambassador and Atlanta mayor Andrew Young was a King lieutenant.
Dr. King talked about this trip all the time, and he talked about the influence that Gandhi had on his life. He learned the meaning of the heritage that he had grown up in. And he talked about that. In fact, our whole civil rights movement, the March on Washington, was a reflection and an effort on our part to imitate Gandhi's Salt March to the Sea. Our teachings, the methods that we used, all came from the life and the spirit of Mohandas Gandhi.
Fellow civil rights era veteran, now Congressman John Lewis, said the Gandhian influence profoundly shaped his own values.
If it hadn't been for Gandhi and Dr. King, I wouldn't be a member of the United States House of Representatives. The teaching of Gandhi changed my life forever, made me a better human being. And today, I can say, in spite of the arrest, I was arrested 40 times during the 60s. Beaten, left bloody and unconscious. But the teaching of Gandhi freed me, liberated me. And today I don't have any ill feeling or malice or hatred toward anybody.
It's a Gandhian value that transcended religious and cultural traditions as distant as King's Christianity and the Hinduism Gandhi was born into.
One of the things about King and Gandhi is that you can follow them without being either a Christian or a Hindu. I think that one of the strengths that they brought is that they understood the universal applications of those ideas that came out of a cultural tradition. And that's what made them, that's what allows someone to listen to even to a King sermon and be inspired by it, even if one is not a Christian.
There's no known footage of the 1959 King visit, but a radio address was recently discovered in the archives of India's radio network.
Since being in India, I am more convinced than ever before that the method of nonviolent resistance is the most potent weapon available to oppress people in their struggle for justice and human dignity. In a real sense, Mahatma Gandhi embodied in his life certain universal principles that are inherent in the moral structure of the universe. And these principles are as inescapable as the law of gravitation.
Half a century later, this trip to India took place after a historic American election, and the link, Gandhi to King to Obama, was plain to see for many.
He had on the wall of his Senate office pictures of Martin Luther King, Mahatma Gandhi, and Abraham Lincoln.
One thing I know for sure, Gandhi and Martin Luther King understood the blues.
The 50-year commemorative trip, sponsored by the State Department, included musical performances by George Duke, Herbie Hancock, and a number of up-and-coming musicians, joined sometimes by Indian artists like tabla virtuoso Zakir Hussain. Throughout the two-week tour across India, one question came up frequently. What would Dr. King think about India today? Would he see much change over 50 years?
Even in a country like India, which has so much in terms of technology and information today, opportunity, there's still immense poverty. And that would be very painful, I believe, to him and my mom.
Nor, in fact, would King likely be pleased at an India today that is a nuclear-armed military power, repudiation, it would seem, of a plea he made in his 1959 radio broadcast here.
Just as India had to take the lead and show the world that national independence could be achieved nonviolently, so India may have to take the lead and call for universal disarmament. An And if no other nation will join her immediately, India may declare itself for disarmament unilaterally. Such an act of courage would be a great demonstration of the spirit of the Mahatma and would be the greatest stimulus to the rest of the world to do likewise.
One of the ironies is that as King met with Nehru and other followers of Gandhi who are now part of the government of India, he found that in some ways he was more Gandhian than they were, because they were now in power. They were now not committed to the kind of course that Gandhi had advocated, the non-industrializing, that he felt that was the wrong course for India to take.
Similarly, Carson says King would be a thorn in President Obama's side today, since he opposed all uses of military force. That's the thing about visionaries like Gandhi and King, he says. They're easy to admire, but difficult to emulate. For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, this is Fred DeSam-Lazaro in New Delhi.
It was 41 years ago this week that Dr. King was assassinated. As our story indicated, the Jewish exodus from slavery in Egypt was a powerful example for the American civil rights movement. Beginning Wednesday evening, Jews celebrate Passover, the annual retelling of their liberation story. We talked about the exodus with philosopher Michael Walzer of the Institute for Advanced Study in Princeton, New Jersey.
The exodus story isn't a story of universal liberation. The exodus of the Israelites from Egypt saves only the Israelites. But the idea is that this can be repeated, and it invites people to imitate it, to do it again. The Haggadah that we read, the book of Passover prayers that we read on the night of the Seder, is a story of divine deliverance, the hand of God against the Egyptians. But people insisted on finding human agency in it, and retelling it as a story of liberation from the house of bondage to the promised land. You marched across the desert to reach a place in which you could have a better life than you could have in Egypt. It's going to be very slow because it takes a long time to erode, to overcome the slave mentality. And in fact, Moses eventually decides, or God decides, it will take a whole generation. It will take 40 years until there are people who were born in freedom. They get there, and it doesn't exactly flow with milk and honey. and freedom is hard work. This is a realistic account of how human beings move through periods of radical social change. The story was an inspiration for the civil rights movement, and the civil rights movement was a great achievement for a liberation for America. But one of the things we've learned is that sometimes you need not only God's help, you need help from your friends, from people like the people in Darfur today. They can't do it themselves. They can't march themselves. They need help. Think of democratic dissidents in China. The world is always radically imperfect and radically in need of improvement. And it is the task of each generation to retell this story and to try to make the world better.
Michael Walzer is the author of many books, among them Exodus and Revolution. In Jerusalem, officials started getting ready for Passover by removing the notes left in the Western Wall by those who want God to read them. It's traditional for visitors to tuck messages and prayers into the wall, a remnant of the Second Temple destroyed in 70 AD and one of Judaism's holiest sites. But in order to make room for new requests to God, religious officials remove the notes twice a year before the major Jewish holidays of Passover and Rosh Hashanah. Then they bury them at Jerusalem's Mount of Olives. There's a holiday for Jews, April 8th, that comes only once every 28 years. It's called Birkat HaHamah, and it honors the sun's return to the same position it had when Jewish tradition says God created the universe 5,768 years ago. There's no special ceremony for the day, but environmentalists say Birkat HaHamah is a great time to remember all the good the sun does. That's our program for now. I'm Bob Abernethy. There's much more on our website, including more of our interviews about Passover and Holy Week, and extended scenes from Hispanic Holy Week services. Audio and video podcasts are also available. Join us at pbs.org. As we leave you, more scenes from last year's Good Friday Pessime service in San Antonio.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're yourretirementcompany.com. Also by the Henry Luce Foundation and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
We are PBS.